Hello, everyone. Hey, Paul. We got Paul with Dev Runner Channel with me today, and excited to have him on. He's a very accomplished runner, especially in the marathon and shorter. Someday we'll get him in ultras, but learn a little bit about his background. So how are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing well. Chipper for, you know, this time of morning. But first of all, before we get into anything, Richard, I just want to say thank you for having me here. It's gonna should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you. You in the trail running community, you know what we call the East Coast. Have you heard?
No.
It's called the Beast Coast.
Okay. And,
yeah, you know, there's a big rivalry between the West Coast trail runners and East Coast trail runners. Well, there's some really tough trail running on the East Coast, and some of the big podcasts on the East Coast, they call it the Beast Coast. So
okay.
When their runners go to these big races like Western States, they say, yeah, that runner's from the Beast Coast.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that rivalry existed, but
oh,
I'm
yeah.
happy to hear that's there.
Yeah.
I see Olga's here. How's it going?
Yeah, Olga. Thanks for joining. Olga's one of my friends. She's living in the UK. So she always showing videos of some really beautiful places to run in the UK. That's some place I'd like to run someday. I've got it on my bucket list.
I'll tell you what, beautiful trail.
There's also a lot of road running in the UK too.
Yeah. I've got a lot of friends from the road running world, thanks to YouTube over there. But Olga, I'm recently aware of her channel. And if I am remembering correctly, she just did one like with the new garlic blooms and some kind of blue flower that was just beautiful.
Yeah. I saw that one too. It's very beautiful. She also has a daughter, which is a very good runner.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So, Paul, tell us a little bit about your running background. I've gathered you started running about 10 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah. When I was 42 years old is when I kind of really became a true runner. I ran in high school for one season. I did a cross country when I was in ninth grade, when I was just a little guy, 13, 14 years old, and hated it. You know, it was one of those where, you know, it was probably utterly my fault. Me and a friend of mine joined the team together, did not train enough. And then when we got to sort of like the Toronto area finals, it was a 5K race through the woods, and we were unprepared, so we just pushed ourselves as hard as we could, and it felt like death when we crossed the finish line. And he continued running, I did not. I was like, well, that's enough of that. So never revisited running again until, you know, like really, truly, I was 42 years old. And when I was 41, I was over 40 pounds overweight. And decided, you know, because I was starting to have issues with my health, decided I better do something. So I started walking during my lunch periods at work with some coworkers just to kind of get some exercise going. And I started to turn my diet around instead of eating like, you know, 3-4 helpings of pasta at dinner time. I just kind of became more aware of my diet and started to bring my calorie count down. And after about 9 months of walking, I decided that I was going to at least try running just to see what happened. And we bought just by sheer chance, a friend of my wife was selling her treadmill because she wanted to become a purely outdoors runner. And so she decided if she sold her treadmill, she'd have to be an outdoor only runner. So I picked that up secondhand, and I spent like, I want to say it was right around a year and a half running only on a treadmill. Because frankly speaking, I was scared to be seen by the neighbors. I had this thing. I didn't want to be mocked and be the guy that they pointed at and laughed at, you know, look at him trying to run, you know, so built up my speed and my distance over a year and a half to the point where, you know, like I've got a little bit of an obsessive personality, Richard. So I built it up to where I started out, where I was running 20 minutes a day for 3 days a week when we first got the treadmill. And then by the time that year and a half had passed, I was running 6 days a week, 8 miles a day and trying to run every single run as fast as I could sustain. Don't know how I managed to not get injured, but
every run was a tempo run.
Exactly. And it was like to the point where it was just like, I was just hanging on for dear life by the end of the week before I got that one day off each week. And, but apparently, it did the trick to getting me faster. Not that I knew it, because I wasn't doing any research, wasn't reading any books about running, wasn't sort of part of any kind of fledgling YouTube running community or anything. So I signed up for my first race, which was a half marathon in the next town over from here.
Okay.
And this was in September of 2014. Yes, it was September of 2014. So the only thing I wanted to do was not come in last place on this race. I had no idea what I was in for, what real runners could run speed-wise, you know. So I went out there, did it. Came in 7th place overall.
Wow.
and ran it in 128, I think 128.37, if down to the second, if I'm remembering correctly.
That's after a year and a half of running?
Yeah, by that time it was closer to 2 years, but because I there was a brief period where I kind of hit the roads.
Yeah.
Where I was 8 miles a day on the treadmill is driving me crazy. So I finally got up the guts to start running around my neighborhood for a couple of months there before the race.
That's amazing. Most average runners, on the 8, 9, 10 minute mile, I mean, you just zoom to the front of the pack after a year and a half. That's really amazing. Cause nowadays I see you running 6 minute, 7 minute miles are your easy days. Most of us dream of running that kind of pace. So what do your neighbors think now when you're speeding through the neighborhood? Is that the main place you run now? Is through your neighborhood?
Well, it's kind of like where that's the first half mile and the last half mile of all my runs.
Okay.
It's just, as I go off onto the bigger roads now these days. But the neighbors at this point are just kind of like, they all know me just because like everybody's always like, do you run every day? I'm like, yes. Are you training for a marathon? Yes. And so everybody just kind of waves as I go by now. So it's become kind
of friendly. That's great. So tell me about your shoes. When you first became a runner, did you choose a good shoe? Because I didn't. And I have
more stories
about that. But what was your first shoe? Were you wearing Saucony back then, or what were you wearing?
No. When I first started, I was running in sort of my New Balance dad shoes. They looked a little bit like a running shoe, but they were mostly just kind of my walking around shoes. I very quickly learned that that wasn't going to cut it. So my first 3 or 4 pairs of shoes were kind of like what I thought were high-end running shoes, but they were still like department store high-end running shoes.
Yeah.
So I was buying like Nike shoes, but they were kind of like, when I remember the first time I went into a running store and I told them what I had been running in, and, I kind of wanted to upgrade. And I started naming off I can't remember them now, what the model names were, but I remember getting a puzzled look from the person at the running store, like they'd never heard of those models before. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that I wasn't running in real running shoes.
Yeah, I've seen that trend over the years. It used to be you could go into like a Foot Locker or something, get high-end running shoes, but now you have to go to a specialty store. These Foot Locker and these mall stores, they mainly carry what high schoolers will wear to school. It's like casual running shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Ellen, how's it going? I see Ellen in the chat.
Yeah, hi, Ellen. Thanks for joining. So tell me, you've been really targeting, I think it was 2:45 in the marathon, or was it 2:45?
Yeah. 2:45. No, 2:45. I was audacious enough to go for 2:45.
That's amazing. That's amazing. A target for, in the marathon. That's really fast. How many marathons? I know of two that you've run, but how many marathons have you done now?
11, I believe 11.
Oh, okay. Wow. So, you had a, 126 and a half, that's probably, 3:15 in the marathon, give it or take, or how did you do in your first marathon?
Yeah, well, I ran that first half marathon. My very first race was a 128. And but that the one thing that was a like to kind of qualify that time a little bit that I didn't know that I didn't consider when I went into that first race. It didn't occur to me to even think about this stuff because, like I said, I was a complete newbie. That course was like, I mean, super hilly. Like, you know,
Oh, okay,
probably like, you know, 1500 feet of gain in that race. So, you know, and I felt it because it was one of those where you get mostly downhill on the way out, and then on the way back, you're climbing back up, so you really suffer on that back half. But yeah, so basically, when I crossed the finish line at that half marathon in September of 2014, the feedback I was getting from more experienced runners was, "Wow, you know, keep running, keep training. You know, you've got a bright future in running if you decide to keep it up." So that really kind of fired me up. And you know, coming from somebody who was scared to be seen by the neighbors as a runner, as soon as I, you know, did, you know, fairly well in that first race, I was bitten by the racing bug. And so I was like, wow, I wonder how I would do. I've got a couple of friends that have run marathons in the past, and I kind of want to join that club now. You know, I'd love to see what it's like. So my infamous story is, remember, this is like mid-September of 2014, and in early November was the Charlotte Marathon. So like a month and a half later, and my longest long run was 14 miles. That was the longest I'd ever run leading up to this half marathon. So I decided, okay, I got 6, maybe 7 weeks to get ready for my first marathon. I can do this. I can do this. I'll just go out and run a little bit more each weekend and off I go. So went out like the Saturday after that half marathon, ran a 16 miler, weekend after that, 18, 20, 22. Decided, I just don't think I'm ready yet. I want to run at least 24 miles so that I can get a feel for what a marathon really is like. And it was 2 weeks before the Charlotte Marathon. I was out, I was probably in mile like 15, 16 of that 24 miler. And my legs were already super fatigued because there was no smart training going on. It was just like more mileage every week. Harder runs every week, not giving myself a down week, not giving myself any breaks. So I was like 15 miles into this 24 miler, and suddenly there was like this sharp, intense snap in my right leg, right at the kneecap. And I didn't know what it was, but I just kind of like walked for a little bit, tried to pick up the pace again, tried to start running, and it wasn't going to happen. It was like real pain, and I started to panic, and I was like, uh-oh, did I just like do something that will ne I'll never run again kind of thing. So I went to the doctor, found out that it was overuse on my IT band. It was just like rubbing against the outside of my knee, and it took me like 6 or 7 weeks to get over that, and then I was back in business, but I missed the marathon. And so I set my sights on the Charleston Marathon, which was in January of 2015. So that ultimately was the first marathon that I actually ever ran, and I ran it in a 3:26.
Wow, that's a great time still. So you've progressed over the years, and your last marathon was what, like a 250 or 251 or something like that?
The last one I ran in. My best time in a marathon is a 2:52, and I ran a 2:55 back in this past March. Which is, hey, Kristen, how's it going?
Hi, Kristen.
The last two marathons that I ran, one in December and one in this past March, were kind of like experiments for me. I was trying to design a training plan, which was based more on high intensity running with less mileage overall. And the reason that I thought that that was possible was because I spent like the last calendar year training for a 5K PR, a 10K PR, and a half marathon PR, which was all based around the same idea of tons of high intensity training with lower overall weekly mileage so that you felt rested enough to go after those really hard, intense workouts. And it worked for the 5K, for the 10K, for the half marathon. I set PRs in 2021 for all three of them. And I was like, I was on top of the world. I was like, there's no stopping me. I'm just, you know, I'm Iron Man, you know, no matter how much you throw at me, I'm going to be able to take it. And I was getting a little bit too full of myself. So I designed this plan where I was like going to push myself really hard with speed for the marathon. And when I ran the Kiawah Island Marathon in December, it ended up being a very hot, humid day. So I underperformed. Okay. I ended up running like a 2:58, which I understand is a good time. And I'm, you know, happy with it. But I thought the reason that I was nowhere near a 2:45 after that performance was purely because of weather. So when that marathon was over in December, I went immediately back into marathon training for the Tobacco Road Marathon in March.
Okay.
Using exactly the same kind of high intensity training, thinking, okay, if I get good weather at the March marathon, then I'll hit my 2:45. And I very quickly learned after running only 2:55 under fairly good conditions. It was like, I think the start line temperature was 55 degrees and it climbed to like 61 or 62. So, you know, not super awesome. Perfect conditions for speed, but nothing that I could use as an excuse for not being able to perform. And I ran that 2:55 and was forced to reach the conclusion that the training that I had designed for that 2:45 wasn't up to the task. So that's where we are now.
Oh, well, great. Let's Kirsten had a question. Paul, do you prefer the high intensity or the higher mileage runs?
That's interesting because Kirsten knows me pretty well. I just like working hard when it comes to running. So I enjoy all of it, really. Like if I am well rested, then the high intensity stuff, I just eat it up. I love being at the track. You know, I'm not a short distance track guy, but I only discovered track running a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. I just love it. It's just so much fun. I see it as a game. So I really, really enjoy pushing myself and seeing how hard I can go.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, going out for a 22 mile long run, you know, that's a different mindset. That's just kind of like you just kind of zone out, put on a good podcast or if it's a zone training kind of run, you're trying to be very careful about your speed, your form, you're just being very mindful of what your body's doing. So it's kind of like a much more zen thing. So I think they counterbalance each other very well, but I like them both.
Great. Yeah. Paul, I think you're a very disciplined runner. I've been following your progress. You remind me a lot of Seth Damore and how you putting in these track workouts all the time. And I think that's really, because he does the same thing. And I think that that's what's helping you get all your speed.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you saying I'm anything like Seth Damore, though. He's amazing.
Yeah. I think you're going to have the same success someday when you start running on trails too, because, you know, he's come from the roads and, you know, for me, I like the longer runs, the slower, you know, slower pace, but I like one thing I've started doing a lot that I've gotten a lot of results from is hill repeats. And I think that's helped me a lot. I do some speed work sometimes, but, very seldom go to the track, but, I definitely see, you know, how you're getting to where you are from all your different, did you learn these things in the RCA?
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of those things where I was kind of a student. I was a student of running from the moment I ran that first half marathon. Like I said, it lit a fire in me that I loved racing. And mm-hmm. once I became an enthusiast of racing, that's when my research kicked in. So I kind of had several years of absorbing everything from Sage Kanade to Seth Damour to you know the true vanguards of run training, like Jack Daniels and Tim Noakes and, you know, like the gurus. I just absorbed all of it. And so, you know, when I finally went out to become a certified coach a year ago, I kind of had the knowledge already, and it was just a matter of just kind of like fine tuning that knowledge and studying really hard so that I could write the exam. But yeah, the RRCA exam and all of the materials that you become privy to once you're certified is exactly along the same lines of what the best coaches are putting out there on YouTube and in their books. Like there's a lot of good advice from the bigger names on YouTube out there for sure. Like, you know, you're not going to go wrong listening to Sage Kanade or Seth.
I've learned a lot from them. And yeah. I took the RRCA training, I guess it was 2 years ago. My teacher was Randy. I don't know who.
Do you remember Randy Aceta. Yeah. Randy Aceta led mine. Yeah.
He was quite a character. And you know, I remember he said he at one time ran a 2:14 or something like that.
So yeah. He's fast. Yeah. He's very fast. Yeah.
But I learned a lot from them on the training plans. To be honest, I haven't really followed him like I should, but I really took the training so I could teach my son. He's in elementary right now, but he wants to get into cross country, so I can kind of put a formal plan together for him. But gotcha. I thought the couple of days of training at RRCA was definitely worth the time. So
it's one of those things where if you're coming at it fairly fresh, like I would think if you're kind of like new to running, and you're very enthusiastic about running, and you want to become a coach, that it's great. But for me, the only reason that I really enjoyed the RRCA presentations before you write the exam is because I had so many years prior to absorb that information at a, you know what I mean? Like I could learn it, relearn it, forget it, and learn it again. And then I went into the whole coaching thing. But it's a lot. It's like a fire hose of information that they hit you with. So if you're not already familiar with that stuff, I could see it being very overwhelming for somebody.
Yeah, and I really learned in my class. I took it here in Austin, and in my class, everybody in the class except for me was already a coach of some sort.
Oh wow! So
they ask a lot of really good questions, so I learned a lot from that, and I was just kind of a sponge. I learned a lot from just the people in the class as well. That was pretty neat.
Yeah. That's the one thing I really did enjoy about that. Like, if it was just listening to somebody lecture the whole time, you know, it would have been dry. My opinion would have been, well, just hand me the book and I'll just read it at my own pace. But I think the real value of that sort of presentation weekend is that you get to interact with others, you get into groups and you share ideas, and you get presented with angles and ideas from other coaches that you would never have thought of in your, you know, inside your own head. So it was really
very true. Very true. We got a question from Sam Elkins. He's actually my younger brother. He's also an ultra runner. Oh, awesome. And he's asking, do you do any training on a bike?
I've got an outdoor bike, like a mountain bike, and I've got a recumbent bike here in the house, stationary recumbent bike, and I'm using it more now than ever before because I've spent the last month kind of trying to rehab my left ankle. So because I'm training just for the mile. Yeah. Which is like a silly, ridiculously short distance as far as I'm concerned. I've been wanting to keep up my the amount of exercise that I'm doing, because I'm running lower mileage the last like month and a half or so. So I've been using the bike to kind of keep my cardiovascular system as pumped up as I'm used to when I'm doing higher mileage training. So yes, I do more now than ever. That would be the answer for that.
That's great. You know, I use it also like after a race or something if I'm really beat up, and I think it's very useful. Oh, we have another Sam on the line in the chat too. Sam from Fitness Throttle. He's the burpee king. He is
awesome. Yeah,
he's in the house. Yeah. Hi, Sam. Yeah.
That's another man made of iron right there. It's like,
oh yeah, he's in upstate New York, so he's out there doing the burpees in the middle of the winter and the snow and stuff. I mean, it's very inspiring.
I did not know that he was in upstate New York for some reason.
Yeah, he's in upstate New York. Yeah.
Oh man, tell us where in upstate, because I lived in upstate till I was 12 years old. I was born in New York City and then lived in Peekskill for.
Yeah, there it is on the screen, Albertboro or something.
I do not know that.
Yeah.
Our elbow cuff.
Yeah, that's a great thing about social media, especially I like with YouTube too, you know. When I'm sometimes you know, I see my friends from Indonesia and Hong Kong, and you know, we've got people from Europe joining in. It's pretty neat.
Oh, it's amazing how you can develop a tight-knit community of people who live tens of thousands of miles apart. It's amazing.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the 5-minute mile project. I'm very interested in this because, you know, right now, you said you run a 5:30 in the past, but where do you think you are right now? If you went out today and ran a mile, what would be your time?
Well, if I ran it today, I'd be in trouble because I did a pretty good threshold run yesterday. But well rested, like, you know, say I went out on Sunday, you know, after a couple of days rest, I think I'd probably run like a 5:20 right now.
Wow, that's great.
You know, I'm hoping, you know, everybody who's watching this or will be watching this on replay, I'm training as if I was trying to hit a 5-minute flat or a 4:59 maybe. That's what I'm using to calculate the paces that I'm doing my workouts at.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the mitigating factors here are I'm coming off of an ankle injury. So the last month has not been, the workouts have not been as intense as I would have liked them to be.
Uh-huh.
And I've got like, I think 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks until sort of race day, or at least the first of the time trial attempts. So the only thing I'm doing now is just trying to just crank up the intensity of my track workouts over the next 4 weeks and mm-hmm. drop as much weight as I can, because man, when you're doing this short distance stuff, everything from 10K down to the 200 meters is, unfortunately, depending on how you see it, really depend, your success is very dependent on the weight you're carrying.
Very, very much so. I know it's a no-no to talk about it, but you know, the Nike coaches have proven that over time, and forget his name. He holds the American record in the marathon, and he lives in Flagstaff. Forgetting his name, but
now I'm going to suffer from the same thing.
You know what I'm talking about.
Alberto Salazar.
Alberto's a Nike, but the guy that holds the American record lives in Flagstaff and coaches, and his wife is a famous female marathoner. I forget his name.
Oh my goodness. Sarah Hall and
Ryan Hall. He talks about it all the time, and he has a great podcast, and he talks about weight does matter. And
it blew my mind. I was listening to his podcast. You know, I don't think he's doing them anymore. He just kind of let it drop. I've listened to the backlog of his podcasts, and there is a couple of them where he talks about, because he's like, I think 5'10".
Yeah.
Now he's a bodybuilder, so he's huge. But back in his racing days, he said his ideal marathon race weight was 138. And this is for a guy who stands 5'10". So that just, when the first time he revealed that, that blew my mind, because I'm like, I'm 5'7". And I generally run marathons right at that same 138, 139. So I'm like, well, I need to get skinnier then. So now, by the time we get to this autumn, I really want to be 134, 135, somewhere in there.
I think that's a great plan. You know, it's amazing how fast these guys were in the 80s and 90s. You know, the Frank Shorters and these guys, they didn't have the, you know, the new Nike shoes. You know, some people say it's kind of like mechanical cheating, you know, and you know, that in the top American guys right now, you know, a lot of them are running for like NAS Elite and Flagstaff and stuff, you know, and they're excited when they get in the 209, 210 range.
Oh, yeah.
In the 80s and 90s, these guys were running faster than that.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, if it was just one of those things where, you know, I mean, there's always ebbs and flows. It's just the luck of the draw each generation. Sometimes you're going to get a bunch of fast guys all at once. But yeah, I there's a lot to be said for the people who were running 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And like, you know, even if you look at like Roger Bannister, the first guy to, you know, get below that 4 minute mile. People kind of laugh at that now because there are people who can run the mile in, you know, like 3:30 something. Yeah. But I'm sorry, but Roger Bannister was running it in like, you know, like nothing shoes. He was getting no benefit from that. The science behind what he was attempting was like non-existent. And if you were given modern athletes the same sort of training that he went through with the same technology that was available to him at the time, 4 minutes is still unbelievable. It's like unbelievable. Like that's superhuman. A 4 minute mile is superhuman. How much training and running?
Yeah, Sam has got a question about how much training you need to run a marathon.
That's a good question, because just to complete a marathon is an utterly different thing than feeling like you don't want to die when you cross the finish line. I would say the minimum to complete a marathon feeling decent, you want to be able to comfortably run a 40-mile week consistently, week to week, not like sort of do it once and then die. If you're running 40 miles a week, you're going to run with a good training plan, you should be able to run a pretty good marathon, like 4 hours or under. If you want to qualify for Boston, I think you're looking at a minimum of 55 to 60 miles a week. If you're a very talented runner, I couldn't do it on that mileage. I'd be maybe just scraping in on 55 miles a week for a Boston qualifier.
I think that's good advice, you know, especially if you're a younger runner, because, you know, the Boston qualifying times have come down so much and they seem to not be firm either. Depending on how many people register, it might go down 5 minutes or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, exactly. Yeah. Whatever times are posted on the BAA website for qualification, you need to be aiming for 6 or 7 minutes faster than that if you really realistically hope to get into the Boston Marathon.
Have you, Paul, run the Boston yet?
I've never run it. I've qualified 9 times, but I've never run it. But you know, Richard, you may be getting the scoop here. I think this may be the first public place I'm saying it, but unless something goes horrendously wrong with my training or something catastrophic happens in life, I'm running Boston in 2023, so I'm really, really excited.
I feel sorry for anybody in the 50 to 55 age group because they just got second.
I appreciate it.
That's awesome. Well, I guess we should finish up on your 5 minute mile. So I know you're training on the track, but when you run it, are you going to try to do it on a net downhill, point to point, or have you thought about that yet?
Yeah, no, I think I'm just going to run it on the track. You know, like I'm doing all my intense work on the track, so I may as well just run it there. You know,
that's great. Do you have a good track where you can go out there and they're not training high school programs and stuff, or is it easy for you? In my area, I remember when we were growing up that all the tracks were open. You could just go out, you know, any high school and do it. But nowadays, I don't know what in your area, but in my area, there's only like a few high schools that don't have a fence and let you on the track anymore.
Yeah, same thing here. Exactly the same thing here. but I'm lucky. Hopefully nobody at the local middle school is going to hear this interview, but I've got two tracks that are nearby to me. One's really nice. Like, you know, it's got like the super giant grandstand, and it's got like the really nice bouncy surface, rubber surface. And that's where I like to do my time trials. But my once a week track trainings actually take place at a middle school track, which is off of their campus in a different location. Uh-huh. And if I get there in the mornings before the football teams or, you know, the various teams show up for their afternoon practices, I have the place completely to myself. And it's not as good a track. It's an asphalt track. So, So you don't get the benefit of that bounce, but it's a track, and I know it's an exact 400 meters. So it's a benefit in that sense. So that's where I do my track Tuesdays.
So what do you got? When you do the time, are you going to just wear like your Saucony Endorphin Pros, or are you going to put on some spikes or what?
No, I can't, because I'll probably be running it at the same track, which is asphalt. But so it'll be the Endorphin Pros for sure. I just Saucony needs to hire me because I've sung the praises of that shoe since they came out like a year and some almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah. So you don't have any problems with the carbon plate? It doesn't bother you at all? Can you run in them every day, or do you rotate shoes?
Yeah. The only time I wear carbon plate is if I'm trying to run like super fast, like these 200 meter repeats that I've been doing lately, for like a progression long run where I'm trying to get faster as the run goes on. One of the benefits of a carbon shoe that isn't as widely advertised, of course it's good for speed. It gives you that extra snap. Mm-hmm. But as an older runner myself, I find that especially on those long runs where you can really wear yourself out, I bounce back a lot faster from those long, long runs with a carbon fiber shoe on foot, because you know, if you go out for like a 22 miler and you're just cranking and you're just picking up the pace as you go, I mean, you're gonna feel it. You know more than me because you run further than me in your ultra training, but you can get really worn out really fast. But with the carbon fiber shoe, because it forces the shoe to flex in a very even way across the entire footbed, it doesn't beat up particular points of your foot as badly. Like the stress is kind of more evenly distributed.
Wow, that's interesting.
So I found that I bounce back a lot faster from those long runs with a carbon shoe on foot.
That's interesting. You know, some of the trail shoes are now coming out with carbon plates as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the longer distance stuff, marathon and plus, especially as we get older, the recovery becomes more and more important.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things you should give it some thought, because I until I discovered that through firsthand experience, I was like, why would anybody running trails need a carbon shoe? But now I'm all about it. Like when I finally do jump into the ultra world, I'll be buying a pair of carbon shoes for sure.
Well, there's several models out now, and I think that's going to be more of a trend. You know, we're going to see it's going to be just like road shoes. So when you're not wearing your carbon plate, when you're not wearing the Pros, do you wear the Speeds or?
Yeah, I've blown through two pairs of Speeds. I'm waiting for the sales to begin in June so that I can pick up. I'll be buying at least two more pairs of the Speed 2s. I love that shoe.
Are you wearing anything other than Saucony? Do you have any other type of shoes you're wearing?
Yeah, I go between sort of my favorite easy day shoe traditionally has been the Hoka Clifton. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't beat that squish, but for an easy day. I purchased the Saucony Shift recently, and I've been doing my easy runs in that, but it's a very firm shoe. So, you know, so I will be going back probably either to the Clifton, but the other shoe that really has me very curious as a possible easy day shoe, because it's capable, according to all the reviews I've seen, it's capable of much more than Easy Days is the Nova Blast 2, the A6 Nova Blast 2.
Oh, okay.
Because that's supposedly very squishy, but it's also supposedly has a nice bounce to it, so you can kind of run moderate days in it as well. So
I'd like to try that. I wore A6 many years ago when I was mainly running on the roads. I've heard a lot of good things about that, and I've also heard good things about the Adidas Ultra Boost.
Who was it? Ben from Run Sensible.
He's running sub 25 Ks in these things, and he also came from Clifton too. I did as well. I wore Clifton from 4 to Series 7. I still have one pair.
Okay.
And then I switched over to the Mach 4s. I like those a lot. But he told me that the Ultra Boost, he got them for Christmas, I think, or something like that. And ever since he got those, he won't go back to Clifton. He really likes them.
That's interesting. So he's wearing those for Easy Days as well as workouts?
Yes, all the time. Yeah. And, you know, he's a very fast runner like yourself. I mean, he's trying to go – he's running sub 25 Ks.
Very cool. Yeah. He's got some great advice about, prehab and rehab on his channel. I hope his channel, really starts growing, cause he's got some solid advice. He's not a trendy guy when it comes to, making sure you stay healthy. He goes with the tried and true sort of, advice. And I appreciate that.
I think so too. And I think his background is like PT and he really knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
What about like hydration and nutrition in especially in the marathon? I thought it's changed a lot. Back when I was doing marathons, you basically got a cup of Gatorade or water, but now I noticed that they do put gels out there and stuff. What do you do, Paul, when you're going into a fast, you know, you're trying to get a PR in a marathon? Will you carry a couple gels on you, or you just don't take any nutrition at all? What's your game
plan? Oh yeah, no, I plan every detail to the point, you know, Richard, where I'm kind of like the weird guy out on the road marathon course, because I don't even like to depend on the aid stations for Gatorade or water. Like I actually carry a pack with me, a hydration pack with me, so that I've got the amount of liquid that I think I'm going to need, and it's the exact mix of what I want, that I've trained with, so that I'm not leaving anything to chance.
Wow. So tell us your secret sauce. What are you using? Tailwind, or what do you typically use?
Yeah, I'm Tailwind green tea buzz flavor. I'm all about that. Yeah. So I'll usually mix, like if I'm going out, like for a marathon, a full marathon distance, I mix 4 scoops of the Tailwind with 3.5 bottles, like these size bottles.
Uh-huh.
Goes into the bladder in the back, and that's my liquid fuel. That's wow. Usually just enough to scrape by 26 miles, taking 1 ounce, 1 ounce every half mile. So I like to keep the fueling very even.
No, that's a very organized plan. Are you getting enough calories out of it that you don't have to carry any gels or anything?
No, I gel as well. I'm insane. Oh. Like every 4 miles, so whatever that works out to. Every 25 minutes, I hit another gel.
So, okay, yeah, that's interesting. So, no, in ultra running, we say you need about 300 calories per hour, and yeah. So that probably works out to about the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, interesting. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. I wanted to talk about your music background, because I can't, you know, we can't avoid seeing all the guitars on the wall. So I think you told me before that some of the music in your videos you actually composed yourself.
Yeah. Like my old intro was my original music. My new intro is, there's a lot less music in it, but yeah, it's still original stuff. Hey Jay, how's it going?
Hey, yeah, Jay's on the line.
It's one of those things where I picked up a guitar for the first time when I was 17 years old. It was actually the same friend of mine who I used to run with in high school, picked up the guitar like a year before I did. And So I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. And that seems to be a great way to attract the attention of girls. So I started taking lessons when I was like 17 and just been doing it ever since.
Great. So do you still play a lot or?
I noodle around in my, the room that I'm in now is sort of my home studio as well. So, you know, I do that. You know, back in the day, I was in a band and toured and did all that kind of fun stuff. But, you know, these days it's all just home recording. I play guitar so that I can write songs. I consider myself more of a sort of a pop music composer than a guitar player. Like I'm not, I'm not super flashy in my guitar playing. I'm just, it's a means for composition. So.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice. My daughter's studying piano, and it just what the teachers have her do and stuff. It's a lot of repetitive, consistent. You know, consistent. A lot like running training. You know,
I was just gonna say. Yeah.
So when do you think we can see you out in the running the trails?
Oh boy, probably. You know, it's funny. Once I've kind of taken my best shot at this mile thing. Uh-huh. Like, you know, I've been advertising it in the series for the 1 mile PR. I've been advertising that I'm going to take a shot on my birthday, which is the last day of May. If the weather is good that day, then that's when I'll go. But I'm perfectly willing to play with moving it around a day sooner, a day later, whatever gives me the best shot at actually, you know, hitting the best time. And if I blow it on the first attempt, Richard, then I'll come back 3 days later or a week later. I'll probably take two or three shots at this just to, you know, give myself a fighting chance. But by the time mid-June comes along, whether I succeed or not, I'm just going to have to drop it and move on, because the ultimate picture here is I'm using this as a stepping stone to build my speed so that I could go with my newly designed marathon training plan, which will see me hitting the weights really hard this summer, will see me over mileaging in my long runs. Basically, I'm going to spend mid-June through August like torturing myself, getting myself back to where I'm physically stronger than I ever have been before, thanks to weight training. And then I want to couple that with getting my weekly mileage back up to about 100 miles a week. And then, then it's time. Then if I don't get a marathon PR, then I know it's time to move on to the ultra world, because my PR days are over at that point.
Yeah, I think you would do great in ultras, and you'll like the community. You know, it's like a tribe, as we say. And you know, 50K is just 10K more. You know, and you know, I was talking with someone yesterday. You know, they're saying, how do you do the crazy ultras? And I said, you know, even a 100 miler or, you know, 100K is, you know, it's 10K, 100 miler, 16. In my mind, I'm thinking about the next aid station, which usually is about 10K away.
Yeah,
so you kind of break it up like that, and you're chatting with friends and having a good time. Before you know it, you know, you've been running 24 hours.
I mean, you can say that, but I'm sorry, I just can't picture that. It's beyond my conception at this point. Maybe, you know, someday soon, maybe, but you know.
I will be interested to see you. You know, with your marathon training, you know, with the weight training and all that, and Boston's in April, I should be again, I guess. Do you plan a fall marathon?
Yeah, that's what this whole buildup is going to be about. I've been trying to find sort of I want to target like December, either late November or December.
Why not CIF or that one in Utah, which are speedster races, you know?
I was thinking about CIM.
Gorgeous,
I was thinking about CIM. I was thinking about the Wineglass Marathon in upstate New York, up in Corning, because that's another like net downhill.
You should ask Jay about that. I think Jay did a video on that. Jay's done that marathon.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I did. Jay. I'm sorry. I was thinking about Fitness Throstle. Cause I know he's currently still.
Jay did a bunch of marathons up north, cause I think he's got some relatives up there.
Yeah. I did see Jay's video on the Wineglass Marathon. Actually, it was really cool. But at this point, I think it's not super ideal, but I think December, it's December 10th or 11th, I think, is the Jacksonville, Florida marathon. And as far as where it lands on the calendar, it's kind of perfect because it gives me plenty of time to be ready, to try to be in super prime shape. And it's also far enough away from Boston that I can get a little rest after it's over before I start training for Boston. So, you know, the only thing that scares me about Jacksonville is that weather can become a factor. I don't know. I would love to go up north, but, you know, to try to get cooler temperatures. But I don't want to, in all truth, to really, you know, let you know where I'm coming from. I don't want to have to travel too far. Jacksonville is a 5-hour trip for me by car. So I can do that. That's not, but if we start to get into 8-10 hours or a 2-day trip, then it doesn't really work for my wife either. So, you know, we've kind of got to be careful, you know, with her health being what it is. That's a factor for me. So.
Yeah, no, completely understand. And the thing about CIF being in Sacramento, it's kind of an expensive place to go. Because I lived in Bay Area for 2 years. I mean, everything about Bay Area is expensive. But one, if you are willing to travel, one to check out is the St. George's. I think it's in, you know, southern Utah. People say that's a net downhill. That's another one that people go to get a really fast time.
Okay, cool. All right. I'll add it to the list. All right. Yeah, because I haven't put my money down with anything yet. So I'm still kind of looking for the ideal race.
Yeah. Well, great. One last thing I wanted to talk about is not really too much running related, but something you've been very successful on. What, you know, for small running channels like myself, I mean, I got, you know, roughly 300 subscribers.
I consider my channel very small.
Yeah, you've been successful growing yours, and I'm curious, what do you think works the best for growing it? You know, is it collaboration or just focusing on putting out good videos every day, or do you have to market yourself with other social media? What have you learned over the last 6 months?
I would say that everything you just said is true. I think it's all of it. I think it's a combination of just, and being consistent too, you know, it's just let people be able to count on seeing you ideally twice a week with something new and try to vary the, you know, like for me, like I can always count on early in the week, I will drop my sort of weekly training video. That's kind of like my staple. I don't have to think about that one. I know every week that one's going to come out. And then the second video of each week is always just, it can be anything, you know, it can be anything from like a product review to, I mean, you name it, you know, a product review, a training talk, something that's not just more about me.
Do you put a plan together for a few weeks, or do you just kind of go with the flow and what you think about it? Cause you know, you're putting together your training. What do you like kind of film yourself after each run, and then you just put it all together and send it out on the beginning of the week? Is that what you do?
Yeah, exactly. When I finish each run, I used to carry my GoPro, but like on those faster days, it's kind of clunky to have that GoPro and the selfie stick in your hand. So I've gotten to the point now where I just run with like a waist belt. I keep hold it up and talk about the run every day. And then I just do a quick, like, you know, 5-10 minute intro, like on a Sunday afternoon, to kind of sum up the whole week. And then I just edit it all together really quickly and drop it on Monday or Tuesday.
That works great. I mean, I like those videos. I do the same thing. I don't carry, when I do film a run, I usually carry my GoPro and I have a couple different sticks. But I've been thinking about, I've been chatting with Mihai Go Running. He has great videos. He often just carries the GoPro and no stick or nothing, carries it in his hand. And I've been thinking about trying that,
you know, that's a great idea.
Small. Yeah. In my last video, which was 50 miler, I had to put the stick and GoPro in my hydration pack when I was not using it. And then you have to stop and take it out. It was a lot of trouble, but I thought about trying to just carry my GoPro without a stick. Have you ever done that? Yeah, I think your video has stopped, Paul.
Too shaky of a picture, and it might annoy people. So,
yeah. Sorry, I think your video it stopped for a little bit there.
Okay. Did audio?
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So, do you carry your GoPro without a stick, or do you always carry it with a stick?
Oh yeah, I was just saying. Yeah, I've done it before. Not on purpose. I like to have that stick. But just to improve the quality of even those post run talks, I think I might sort of pick that up again, because I always worry that the quality of the picture from my phone, I mean, it's high def, but it doesn't have as good a stabilization.
Yeah,
it always worries me that I'm annoying the viewer when it gets too shaky.
That was my concern about carrying it in my hand, is the stabilization, but it looks like Mihai's got that worked out. I also have a chest strap that I use for biking, but I've never tried using that on a run. I kind of worry that my hands might get in the way or something.
Well, let me save you the GoPro chest strap that I have. I did some experiments early on in my YouTube channel days, and it just bounces too much. It just doesn't.
Okay. I'll just keep the head from my bicycle then.
Yeah, the head mount or a selfie stick are the best ways to get a good image.
I haven't tried the head one. I've seen people using it. I've always worried that when I sweat or something, it would slide off or something.
Yeah, I don't think I could easily dig it out right now, but there is like a, you can get a clip mount, and you can actually screw the GoPro to the clip mount and then clip it to the front of a baseball hat. So,
that's
another way to do it.
I'll have to try that. I have one of those. So
it's a little bit, you have to get used to sort of like that weight pulling your head forward a little bit. But,
yeah. Well, hey, Paul, thanks for joining me today. I think we had a great talk. And
thank you for having me. It was awesome.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do it again sometime. But wish you the best in your training. And I think, when's your birthday? You said May 27th?
May 31st, last day of May.
May 31st. Yeah, my son's 17th, so it's a birthday month. So, we're looking forward to this 5-mile PR, 1-mile PR. So.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, hopefully I get close anyway. Okay. Should be a fun ride.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Good seeing you.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.